Well, we know that the last few days we've been dealing with this subject in a progressive way on mystic relaxation. And yesterday, it culminated in a guided meditation focusing on the image of the heart and wings. And I thought it might be good just to help deepen that practice, to do that practice again. Would people like to do that again? Only if it's beneficial to you. We can move on if not. Yeah. And then I'm hoping that to elaborate a little bit the usefulness of this, and I'd like to highlight sort of in an overview the teachings of the last few days with readings actually. They're very, again, pithy readings from this book titled The Inner School Esoteric Sufi Teachings. Shamsuddin to pass these out again, and please feel free. I don't want a wrinkled one or a messed up one to find its way to anybody. To keep these if you'd like, and if not, turn them back in. We'll certainly make use of them another time. Thank you. And while he's doing that, I just want to review a little bit what we've talked about the last few days in terms of. The first day was about the different rhythms. And again, what were those three rhythms? Does anyone remember? Spreading rhythm, a direct rhythm, and zigzag or a chaotic rhythm. Okay. And we found, what is the benefit of the stretch rhythm, the rhythm that is stretching or pervading? Okay, so having influences over groups of people in a positive way. Anything else?
It's the 360 breath, right? It's the 360 breath.
It's this 360 breath.
It also just connects you up with everything else.
Connects you up with everything. Absolutely. We see that our influence isn't just in one direction. Anything else?
I have a question about it. Is there a contact point that it emanates from and to within us?
I think everything is centered from the heart, but now I want to talk about where is that heart? Where, when you focus on the heart, people say focus on the heart, where are you focusing? Most people go here, right? But really sometimes we want to think about the deep heart, the root of the heart. And Anayat Khan even says, he refers to that as actually being the solar plexus. And the mystics, the yogis always talk about until that center is opened. There can't be awakening. Now, Murshida Vira always used to tell us to take our fingers like this, pinch them together so they look like that. A little bit lower so you have some space. And so, like this, you see? Maybe your fingers don't go like that. And this is a point, this is a measurement for you. So, for the men, she always said, put your thumb in your belly button and then take this measurement and go down. And for you, that is the deep root of your heart. And for the women, she tells you to put your forefinger here and go up. When you push there, do you feel it? I feel something as a woman. I don't know about the men, what you might feel. Do you feel some stimulation there? I don't mean this stimulation. I mean a really deep feeling, a deep connectedness there. You understand what I'm saying? Can you feel it? It's like a special button. Okay, so that's the root of the heart, and then it emanates up from there. And if you think about our body, not only our physical body, but our celestial body, you know, this is also the deep lobes of the lungs, which one could liken, when you breathe in, if you look at a lung, you know, it has these different lobes, even this upper lobe, which we rarely stimulate with our breath, but the stretch breath can do that. That's like our wings. And it's connect, you know, then it goes out through the arms and the hands. And these are like the wings. Our shoulder blades are like the sort of the connector point for the wings. Now, Murshida Vira used to talk about relationships between men and women. And she used to feel that point of contact, a sexual contact, it could be woman and woman and man, I'm just saying partnership in union. Hazar and Icon has also given us a body of teachings called the Rasta Shastra that deals with this subject. I would suggest that all of us that consider ourselves on the Siddhi path, that we study it. And Murshida Vira used to talk very openly about relationships, in that frequently men are stimulated in this way. You know, their penises. And that women are receptive to that. Again, it could be man and man, woman and woman. I'm just speaking in this way, but you have to apply it to your thinking or to your preference. And that she always advised that the receptive party in the relationship, because the energy's coming here, that it is our responsibility to raise that energy to a higher plane of consciousness so it doesn't stay at that base animal nature, or else it's just always base and animal. And what's more, she recommended that you embrace your partner so that you're touching this part, which she said are the wings, and you hold that part to raise the consciousness. And she elevated this sexual act to really something of a spiritual connection. You understand what I'm saying? And I think we have to be very careful. Again, I'm not criticizing anything, but we have a lot of percussion instruments in this hall, and you know what that instrument's for? What chakra do you think it's for? Huh? First and second. There's all this stimulation coming. And there's the tendency, you see how it can race, start to race, get so faster and faster. This is the beauty of Indian music, from which our musical zikr, this zikr that we have from Anayat Khan, you see, it's not this fast rhythm. It's an ektal, 16 beats to complete the phrase. It's a very slow, dignified, noble vibration. I've seen Indian musicians stop in the middle of a concert and correct a drummer that wants to take control of the concert, you know, wanting to take the rhythm. Wanting to take the rhythm. Which we're talking about rhythm here. This was our first lesson, was about rhythm. I think that, for example, here when we have, please notice that's happening, I think to not be swept away by it, to, because it can be contagious, you know? Disease is contagious. These states can be contagious. And I think that it's very, very important that we remember in our Sufi heritage that there is such a distinction made between hal and maqam. Hal being temporary states and maqam being truly stations of realization that become accomplished. And so we don't want to, we of course have to go through these states, but we want to maintain it, right? So if we find that what I do myself is I start to become much more still and kind of just assume the a container for that energy, you know? However, if it continues, I decide not to participate and I leave. This is the path of spiritual liberty. People can do as they please. It's everyone's choice. There's no some, this is right, this is wrong, this is yes, this is no. Do it this way because it should be. No. But we have choice to whether to be party of it. You understand? Does this make sense? Thank you for the question. Yes. Everyone has to speak up. If I can do it, everyone can do it.
I was thinking about your question also, and I don't know if this is related or not, but I've heard people talk about the sobriety above the ecstasy. Try to drop that ecstasy and then you can go above it. It's like, I think it goes back to what you were saying about the smite. Yes?
Well, there's a beautiful paper that Mersha gives, and it's on the difference between excitement and exaltation. There's really a difference. Yes? But sometimes there is not a melody. It's a chanting. And believe me, this is what gets people riled up to go into war, this kind of rah, 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 rah. So from the first day, life is rhythm. This rhythm may be divided into three stages. And at each stage, this rhythm changes the nature and character of life. One rhythm is mobile, another active, and the third chaotic. The mobile rhythm is creative, productive, constructive, and through that rhythm, all power and inspiration are gained, and peace is experienced. The further stage of that rhythm, the active rhythm, is the source of success and accomplishment, of progress and advancement, the source of joy and fulfillment. And the third stage of this rhythm is chaotic rhythm, is a source of failure, of death, of disease and destruction, a source of all pain and sorrow. Just a couple more sentences to highlight this. The first kind of rhythm, again, that is considered the mobile rhythm, is slow. The second kind is faster, and the third faster still. The direction of the first is direct. Of the second rhythm, it is even, and the third is zigzag. When one says that a person is wise and thoughtful, it means that he is in the first rhythm. The wise and thoughtful person is in the first rhythm. When one says that a person is persevering and successful, he is in the second rhythm. Direct, persevering. And when one has said that a person has lost his head and has gone astray, he's in the third rhythm. And then Murshid went on to say, and we studied further, that there are also these three aspects of the self, the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. Physical, mental, and spiritual. But he does then go on to say, he does define them as the realm of our physical body, of our mind, and of our feelings. Or even one could say body, heart, and soul. So it's like the, you know, St. Teresa, the metaphor of the onion. You know that metaphor? It's beautiful. Sort of peeling the layers of the onion away so that this sweet part, there may be a lot of tears while that happens. But then that sweet part of the onion is there. It's a beautiful metaphor. And Murshid went on to say that even we gave that beautiful story about the king, that when his ministers would come to ask for advice, he would ask them to read it again. They wanted something and they would be reading a document, read it again, read it again. So he let there be space and time so that the proper vibration could arise, so the proper response could arise. And he said, we are so ready to even, in a conversation, complete someone else's sentences. He cautioned us against that chaotic method of encountering each other. And then he talked, gave us this beautiful story about in Turkey, when Turkey had been seized by war and all the people were in despair and they were hungry and, you know, depressed. And one man came, and out of his vibration, the whole nation was raised up. And he's saying to us, one person can make a difference. One prayer can make a difference. One thought can make a difference. We need not feel. People often say to me, you know, you should do this. And I say, yes, and you should also. Maybe you would help by doing so. Why put that on my back? Take up the responsibility. You understand? It's to each of us. And not to act like baby choo-choos. Choo-choo. Choo-choo. Choo-choo in Italian is mules. I want to say a few words about this because it's very important. You know, and you spread this word, you can all say Maria Sensei. This path truly is, although the message is beyond an Eastern message, and Murshid makes a very clear distinction of that. This is not the message of a message of the East. He's making a very strong defining statement there. People, and I spoke at the Federation gathering about this too, a little bit. I tried to make this point. People often want to justify the path of Hazrat and Icon by dragging it back into classical Sufism, which is often associated with Islam. It was not, it is not that, it will not be that, it was not intended to be that. The end, finished, period. Hazrat Inayat Khan himself in the Gothika says, I owe everything to my teacher of the Chisti lineage, but the account has been paid in full and the account is closed. Now we have a new impulse, a new message. Everyone wants to say, we're Chistis. No, no. I'm sorry. Yes, we have roots there. You can call yourself whatever you want to call yourself. Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, Chisty, whatever, Islamicist, I don't care. But if you're talking about an icon, it's not true. Simple, finish the end. He says it himself, you don't have to believe me. You want to write me, I'll send you the Gothika. I'm happy to do so. But also, I wanted to say this about it. It does have an oriental flavor to it, however. Now, I want to talk to you about moral culture and taking each other, ourselves, yourself, no one else, into accountability. And it has everything to do with this teaching, with rhythm, and these different aspects of our being. If you feel that you find it very difficult to have an intimate relationship with a person who you view as your guide, if you find it difficult to take advice or recommendations, this is not the path for you. Go somewhere else. Go sit in a big congregation. This is an individual path. You want to go and have someone tell you what to think and what to feel, and you can say, I like it or I don't like it. That's your choice. This isn't the path for you. This is a path of discipleship, like it or not. And I'm going to ask each one of us to be conscious of that and respectful to each other. Believe it or not, yesterday, after this beautiful initiation took place, someone walked up to me, but they could have just walked up to you, and this is how I was addressed. Hey, I need to talk to you. And you know what I did? I walked away. First of all, hey is something you give a horse to eat. It's not how you address something. Okay? Hey, I need to talk to you? If we talk to each other that way, the children will learn this. Then we have another big society problems with each other. May I have a moment with you? Do you have time? Even we in our friendships should speak in this way to each other. And I always tell the people that I'm working with on the path, I'm very adamant about these behaviors because I also bring eminent teachers in for them to meet, and I really don't want people treating people that deserve a respect, which we all do, but some people are in a very masterful positions. And you know, if you're a sensitive soul, you know this. In the East, it's not thought of that you would speak to your elder or your teacher before they speak to you. They open the space for that. Don't gobble it up. This is the problem with Madoffs and corporations and oil killing the environment and all the animals, because people want to gobble everything up. And we do that too with our spirituality. It's called spiritual materialism. Then this manner of respect. And also, if you're sitting at a table with someone, and let's say even in a social situation, you know, you even wait for your host to pick up their fork. You don't start like this as soon as you have food served before you. You understand what I'm saying? And also, if you're sitting with when I meet my teachers, I'm always waiting to be invited to, please take a drink. Then, you know, if they're not drinking, please you first. This attitude, this is really what Murshid's teaching us. This changes the world. Not how many wazifas or how many prayer beads or how many people we know or whatever, how many camps we've been to. You understand what I'm saying? Spread the word. I'm on the warpath. But you understand, it's this, what Murshid talks about, to tie it back, talks about this, these finer vibrations, this feeling heart, deeply feeling heart, when we are not demanding of someone, but when we're sensitive to the co-vibrations together. Or we say it in the dance, oh, if you meet someone who doesn't want to turn quickly, be sensitive to that. Well, it's the same in life. Right? Match, sort of be sensitive, receptive to what's happening in the space and properly respond or do nothing. Richard said, and I wish I had that paper with me. I gave that lecture last summer at summer school in Holland, but there was something about, and the whole lecture was about this, the art of penetration, which has to do with the art of concentration. And he said the whole, let me see if I can recall. The whole cause for disappointment in life is ourselves, that we don't have the ability to penetrate deeply into things. And Mershon gives that analogy, as I said yesterday, about the mirror being empty and still, and that then we can only know if these things that are coming are something that are arising deeply from within ourselves, or if there's something that's coming at us. It's very important to distinguish these two things. That sometimes if there's a sudden shift in your physical being, or your emotional being, or your mental thinking, you, when you wake up one, you're feeling one way, and a few little while later, tired. What has happened to me? Nothing, there's no cause for this. But there is. A vibration has come in, and it's changed your vibration. And that's why he says it's so important to understand these rhythms, understand the vibrations, understand our own natural rhythm, because then we can tell when it's been disturbed, you see. But this has to do with mystic relaxation, you see. We're always fighting it. We're never resting in our peace lagoon, so to speak. Where's our peace lagoon? He also talks that with these different rhythms that one can calm all of the tension in one's nervous system and muscular system. And when one is able to come into this state of repose, he says it's like 10 days of sleep, not 10 hours, 10 days of sleep. It's a very profound teaching. How can we possibly grasp it all in a few days? But I'm hoping that will interest you enough. Again, I told you we have copies of this. If you could give a little bit, we're asking for a $5 donation just to help pay for the materials. And also this yellow book of the practice manual is available too. And Karima Gita has that, or Raheem can help you with that. But it's like they say you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. It's like that too, right? We can be here, we can listen, but if we don't apply it, what change can happen? You know, they say enlightenment happens after 20 years, but after in a moment, but after 20 years of great effort. He also gives that beautiful metaphor that we're like of that, you know, Kabir, the great poet, says that the fish in the water aren't thirsty. And he talks about we're a drop that's been individuated from the ocean, but we're the same as that ocean. And we're always seeking to return into that ocean. Dion last night, I wasn't here, but she did a beautiful song that actually highlights that point. If you haven't heard it, I hope I've asked her to please make even a low profile recording of it and put it on CDs for us, or, you know, share it as an MP3. We have the technology, you know, Cabrie and I are quite wizards with all that. She could make a little money and she could offer something back to the Sufi movement. It would be a good cause. You know, it's very good to do that. My work that I'm doing for Pir Shabda and Murshid Wali Alia, they've asked me, I think I've told you, to design the cover for what the working project was called, the Wazifa Project. And now it's, after some deliberation, I'm very happy that it's being called the Physicians of the Heart. And it's a wonderful title, isn't it? Huh? Hopefully for the centennial. And did Murshid come to the United States? It's this year. We're in the centennial year, and it was September 13th when he set sail. So by fall. Maybe for the Jamia. Inshallah. Why did I tell you that? There was a reason. Oh, the reason is they've offered some contribution. Because I do many things for free, you know, for them and for others. I don't care. I like to give my talent. But I said, no, not to me. You make that donation to my Buddhist teacher's monastery to help with that teaching and that group. But I don't need anything. So it creates good merit for them as well as for myself. It's good. But to think in those generous ways, if something comes your way that you really don't need, how to increase your merit and your contribution of your vibration of generosity to give it in that way is something to think about, or a portion of it. And then Murshid talks about, in the second section on mystic relaxation, which we covered yesterday, meditation can be reached through two preliminary stages. The first one is concentration, and the next one is contemplation. And he says, after these two stages come the third, which is meditation, and then there's that fourth stage, which is realization. Realization. And I want to emphasize that too, just that word realization. Real I. Realization. The real I. Realization. But often I think this process can be aborted too soon. That God realization is only half that journey. The second half is bringing it into, you know, everyday life, into self-realization, to be self-actualized, self-realized in that divine presence. And then Murshid elaborates a little bit more. He says, from a mystical point of view, concentration can be regarded as having three aspects. And actually, in the practice that we're going to do, there are five stages that we'll go through, but all of these three aspects will be covered. One is a reflective aspect. One is a constructing aspect, and one is an improvising aspect. So first we will meditate on an image, then we'll reflect on it inwardly. You might think of it like showing on the mirror of your mind. And it's not something you're going to see. It's not, when I use the word visualize, it doesn't mean, oh, I'm going to see this image. Maybe imagine the image. You don't have to actually maybe see it, but you imagine it, or the essence of the image. Okay? Because I know that people, you know, I'm a designer, so of course my capacity to visualize is very strong. I can conceptualize things in space and move them. But not everyone has that. People are audible. People have a tactile. They feel things. So, you know, feel what your sensory, most heightened sensory perception is. And if it's sound, then when we look at the heart and wings, maybe it has a sound. And that's what you reflect on. But the whole point is that we're going to Concentrate, release. And when we release, if you do this practice enough, it may not happen in this session, but you will find that you will find yourself in a natural state of ease and openness. In Tibetan Buddhism, they call it Sokchen, a natural state. But who is in that natural state of natural rhythm? So reflecting, constructing, and improvising are the three stages he talks about. So shall we try the practice again? For some, it will be the first time. And if you just come in, we have these images that we're going to reflect on. Someone today, we kind of have had a little impromptu class around lunchtime, and they were asking about the different objects that could be reflected upon, and really one could use anything. I remember when Rashida Vira led this practice at Heartsong, and she also did it here at this camp sometimes, she would have us over the break find an object within nature that we felt just intuitively drawn to contemplate. So that could have been a flower or a particular stone or, you know, something, a leaf. And then we would reflect on that in these different stages. And again, I want to say what I said on the first day. This was a prescription that she would give to people when parents would come and speak to her about maybe if a child had been harmed in some way or some abuse had come to a child, how to help give a favorable impression to the mind, kind of help clarify that impression. And again, it ties into the teachings that we had. Mersha talks about it's very important to be able to construct something and retain something. It is equally as important to be able to erase something from the mind, something that is unwanted. And he said, if we don't have this capacity, then we can become obsessed with a thought that continually brings us down. And so it's very important to replace or transform that impression with another impression. Yes? Yes.
It's not even a thought for me. It's, well, my script is not good enough.
Yeah, I think, you know, other people have brought this up, and I think that it's so much can be, you know, they say, in my field, and I know you know this in your field, which is dancing and minds from the visual arts, they say that 90% of our communication is nonverbal. So it was a look, like, you know what I mean? Can just write, you know what I'm saying? Like, or, you know, something like that, and you pick up, oh, I'm not being accepted. This was not acceptable. You know, and we all do it. We all give it and we all take it. You know what I mean? So, and also understanding that we all give it sometimes makes it easier for us to take it. But this is also, I tell you, Murshida Vera, please, if you go to her website, anyone that has these issues, because she did these beautiful teachings on the inner child. And it's there, it's on her website, in the archives. And that was the teaching that she gave when Heart Song was being dedicated. She was invited to Heart Song to give a teaching and to dedicate that shrine, which was intended to be a Sufi shrine for all the Sufi orders to come and worship together. Not this one or that one. It's intended to be a unifying site, and I believe it is. And at that retreat, I took my initiation with Murshida Vera. But she gave this teaching on the inner child, and as part of this, she gave these concentration practices to help us have something beautiful to reflect on. But she asked us as part of it, I'll just give you the pithy, quick version. She made us, in part of that process, she asked us to list all of the characteristics of our mother that we could remember, and that went through the different levels, from physical to emotional to mental to even spiritual beliefs. And then she asked us to do that of our fathers. And then she said, now whatever, is there anything left over that's there in you that hasn't come from one of those two? And she said, perhaps you might consider these your divine inheritance, because a lot of them are very positive qualities that you'll find will emerge. When that has all been delineated, there's something else there. And then you start to think, oh, that's what I need. I can recognize this, but I have a choice. Do I want to identify with that or these divine qualities that are emerging? This is also part of the path of initiation, to discover that. It's like I always say to people, I don't know how anyone lives without dogs. And I don't know, and I don't mean that as an insult to cat people. So we could say, I don't know how anybody lives without cats or reptiles or birds or whatever that is. Mine happens to be dogs. But I don't know how anyone lives without this kind of path of self-realization, self-illumination, this inner life. I don't know how it's possible. I have an interesting friend. I won't mention his name, but he's very famous. He's a living legend in the field of design. Originally from Germany, has a worldwide reputation. And he's very drawn to me because he's a self-proclaimed, I don't know what that is when you don't believe in anything. You just sort of believe in empirical data. I don't know if that's an atheist or there's another term, do you know? Agnostic or whatever. And you know, now he's reached his, you know, older years. He's still very vital. He's so sad and he's so depressed. He calls sometimes, he's retired now. And I won't say even what part of the country he's living in, but he'll call because he wants to talk about spiritual matters. He says, I envy you so much that you have this inner life. I want to know what that's about because I can see that my way has left me empty now. He says, it's not all about this external stuff. He has a great passion for education and design, and I said, well, that's your religion. You don't have to believe in a deity or God. That's your religion. Appreciate that. That's what you bring. Talk. It's beautiful. But he also knows there's something that's lacking. Thinking can get us only so far. That's right. That's a Joe Miller, yeah? So I'm going to repeat that for the recording. Worship Joe Miller. He used to say, you get more stinking from thinking than drinking, but to feel is for real. And he was a slight, slender man. I remember meeting him. We were together, I think, in California. And he was so dynamic. I mean, he had such a booming voice, you know, and... which story did you tell?
Well, I we work for the self-serve, in fact,
so sweet.
You're invited to the city. So he let us set in on the meeting, and it's the first time I can meet some Joe Miller.
Yeah.
He's just sitting there in the chair, and he's wanting to be there with somebody who's getting a higher initiative role. And I'm going to see Joe what offer this role. Stands up, sits out the door, pulls it up like that.
Jump in there, baby!
Yes.
Perfect.
It's so perfect with that big voice, and everybody laughed. He was a humor master, too. And here's also important what you're highlighting about Pierre Moynihan. Pierre Schaub does the same way. You know, we were there, and we were staying in the house, as Ollie Cotter says. We've traveled this path together as husband and wife and as dear friends and brother and sister, you know. And we were there together. Maybe we weren't even married at the time, I don't recall. But anyway, it was a beautiful part of my path, at least. I hope you remember it that way. And, you know, we were there. And Murshid Moynihan, Pierre Moynihan, invited us right into that inner circle. And I was an initiate in the Sufi order. Ollie Cotter and the Rouhaniyat, it didn't matter to him. It didn't matter. That was in the 80s. I think before the Federation even had been formed, the Federation of the Message. We have two saints in the room, by the way. Do you know that? Just like a saint to go, ooh. Karina Gita and Ollie Cotter, they're saints, I'll tell you. And then because of them, I am here today. Karina Gita was with me in India during a very dramatic experience, and if it weren't for her, I probably wouldn't have survived it. In other words, lots of care from special people, but she was my constant companion. And Ollie Cotter, when I could hardly walk or speak, took good care of me. Made sure I had a bell here, and all I had to do was ring it. I will never forget that kindness and love you've given me. Thank you. Never. I could not have done it without you, Ollie Cotter. Thank you so much. Great beings. Great beings walk amongst us, and you all are also. I know you are in your way.